Together we will stand, fight until fall. Come on now, people, let's get on the ball and work together. Come on, let's work together.
Do it, children.
Now, my people, say now, together we will stand. Every boy, girl, woman, and man.
Well, yesterday, the Duluth branch of the NAACP was working together and then some. They had a free face mask distribution, and apparently they had about 400 masks. There were two to a bag, with the idea that you wash one and while you're wearing one, and then you switch off, and that makes perfect sense. And they started giving out the bags right around 6 o'clock, and they were going to go until 7:30, and the bags were gone in about a half an hour. Duluth City Councilor Janet Kennedy joins us this morning. She also chairs the NAACP's Health and Environmental Equity Committee, and she joins us this morning to talk about the event a little bit. Hey, Janet, good morning, and how are you?
Good morning. How are you this morning?
It's a busy time, but boy, you hear a story like this one, and it just makes you feel great. Now, you were in the midst of getting ready for a city council meeting, so the timing wasn't really ideal for you yesterday, but I'm sure that you've had a lot of conversations with people about it after that. First of all, the mask giveaway, you're giving masks to anybody, but you were prioritizing people of color. Talk about why that is.
Yeah, the mask giveaway was amazing and how it came together. I do want to be sure to give a shout out to Lynn Gort and Kay Allen, who made many of the masks, and Ivy Bineal, who was an executive committee member on the Duluth branch NAACP, who organized it and graciously asked us as the health committee to come along and help. And so I'm very proud of our organization. So yesterday, you know, from 6 to 7:30, we're giving the masks away, and we're all home trying to do what we can to be sure that all of our community members are making it through, although we've lost a few. When I say community members, I look across the county and some of our neighbors who haven't made it or have lost members, and want to just pray for those families. But to be able to do something and feel like you're making a difference, which is tough when you have to stay home and limit yourself, and we're all sort of action-oriented, these folks came together. You know, and we really thought about our organization and how we work for all people in our community, but we want to make sure we're looking at bettering the lives of people, especially Black, Indigenous, and people of color, who for years have had health disparities and have been left out of the process. Now, we're getting better at this as a community and as people of Duluth, but there's a lot of work we need to, and a lot of ground we need to make up because of some of the historical racism and other things as far as policies and how they've impacted people who aren't living in the majority. So, you know, we know that there's health disparities. We know it's across our neighborhoods, and we know it's depending on where you live and depending on which culture, which heritage you're born into. And the realities of how that really the COVID is impacting that. And people that are facing the disparities are African American, Indigenous, and people of color more than others. It isn't to say that we're going to be exclusive to other people who are having difficulties accessing a mask, but it's important that we try to lift up those who are facing that disparity the most. It not only helps those community members, it helps our community as a whole, especially when we're looking at COVID. So, you know, a lot of people of color face high rates of diabetes, obesity, heart disease, and blood pressure issues. We know that. We know that there are numbers around that. And so these are the people that are most at risk for COVID right now. And so we want to make sure we're giving masks to those people.
And then, of course, when you add into that the idea that frequently it's harder for them to have access to health care. If you don't have insurance, if you go out into an environment and you have a bad experience with someone making a racist crack or being you know, the delightfully delightful way people can really be insensitive sometimes, that may be a real discouragement for you in terms of going to seek health care. And, of course, for some folks, just transportation is an issue. How am I supposed to get there? What am I supposed to do with my kids? So when you add those into the other existing health conditions that many people of color face across the country, in our community and across the country, it really does put them at a higher risk for coming down with this bug that is just taking advantage of anybody that has the tiniest little, you know, lack of immunity, so it can kind of get a foothold.
Right. Yeah. Well, we also know that Black, Indigenous, and people of color members are also working at some of the lower wage jobs, which are considered our essential workers. And then, you know, to care for their families, how important that is. Now, I know most of the employers are taking heed to some of the requirements and making sure their employees are safe, but it still puts their other family members at risk. You know, so it's important that we, you know, provide the free masks for access, and the importance of how to create awareness on the CDC recommendations about wearing masks, covering your mouth, wearing gloves, and not, you know, really staying at home if you can, not touching your face. One important thing that I realize are, like, some of the kiddos and how we're coughing and sneezing, you know, like, into your elbows and making sure that you wash your hands. And so we want to keep people updated, and we have Dr. Arnie Vigneau, Dr. Mary Owen, and Dr. Thornton, who have all done PSAs for the NAACP. You can see them on our website, social media, Facebook, YouTube. And so we want to be sure that people can stay updated on how to stay safe. So check out our website as well.
It was maybe 10 or more years ago now that my daughter came home and showed me, this is how you're supposed to sneeze or cough, and you do it into your elbow. And I thought, your entire education is now worthwhile. This is the smartest thing I've ever seen. You know,
right.
And it just makes you wonder how in the world we thought for so long that sneezing into our hands or coughing into our hands was a really good idea.
Well, I remember people used to carry around handkerchiefs.
Well, yeah, when you had a handkerchief, that was a little different. Yeah.
I know, but I thought that was one of the grossest things I've ever seen, because then they just put it back in their pockets, right, or under their sleeves, and it's like, oh, man.
Well,
that's very healthy.
I'm just saying that this is how you know love, because we have people in our families that, you know, my mom, grandmas, moms for generations washed those handkerchiefs without complaint. So they were better women than I am, that's for sure. But
you know, one of the things I know that I had found is when now caring for my mom who's elderly. I'm having to go out and shop and socially distance myself. And I had even had trouble finding a mask. I happened to find one here in her basement that was, you know, she had used, and it was still in the package for, like, dusting and painting.
Sure.
And otherwise, I wouldn't have one right now, but it's getting a little bit older. So it was like, where do I get a mask? Because we do want to save, you know, some of the N95s and some of the other masks for our essential workers and our healthcare providers. And so it was so timely. And then so after we've noticed, you know, there were a lineup of people who came for these masks, and they went so quickly that I now have other community members calling, like, where do I get a mask? And so it was so timely that this happened. And you know, really wearing a mask is the key to stopping the spread here in our community. So the distribution is so timely. We are going to be having another one on Thursday in Western Duluth. We'll be at Memorial Park from 5 to 7 p.m.
Now, I understand that you need folks to sew masks. And again, this is a perfect, or even construct them. You've got on your Facebook page a way that you can put masks together, use rubber bands and shop towels and a stapler, I think. And so you don't necessarily have to be crafty or have a sewing machine, although Arnie Vigneau does have his grandmother's sewing machine now. I'm just pointing that out. So, So I expect that he should be sewing some truly artistic masks with that. But there are ways that you can construct them that are not sewing, or you can go ahead and sew. If you're like Janet and you're action-oriented and you want to do something, you can sew up masks. How are you encouraging folks to do this? Do you want them to get in touch with you? If people want to take part in this effort on Thursday, and it sounds like there's going to be plenty of folks who are wanting these masks, what do you recommend that they do? What's the process?
Yes, we definitely will be accepting masks. We're finding that last night there is a great need. You know, you always sort of have an event and do an action for our community, and you never know who's going to show up. And this, we were thinking, well, it's cold out. There may not be a lot of people. But obviously, this is a great need. So anyone who has the ability to sew or put together a mask with the instructions that we have out there, we definitely will be accepting them and looking at maybe we need to do this next week or every other week, or maybe this is not the only two times that this happens. We're assessing that at this time. And then for people who want to come and receive a mask, the distribution on Thursday, just please know that we're really making sure we're looking at that social distancing. So 6 feet apart. Yesterday, some people came up and drove up in their vehicles. So if you need a mask and you have access issues and you're in one of those groups, please come by. But I just want people to know that we're not going to turn anyone away.
Janet, thank you so very, very much for joining us. Is there, again, is there a number or something that people can call if they'd like to take part or if they have questions, or what's the best way for people to contact somebody if they either want a mask or they want to take part?
So, again, you can go to the NAACP website. You can send us an email, Duluth Branch NAACP. There's social media, Facebook. You can also call this number, my number, 218-341-6113. Right now we're having people come to the distribution, but if you have really some really significant access issues, you can certainly give us a call and we can see if we can start doing a few deliveries to those who are in high need. So, yeah.
Janet, thank you so much again for joining us this morning. We'll get some links and some more information up on our website. You stay well, stay safe, take good care of your mom and yourself, and I hope we get a chance to talk soon.
Okay, thank you so much, and everyone stay well.
Janet Kennedy this morning. She is a Duluth City Councilor, and she is also the chair of the local NAACP's Health and Environmental Equity Committee.
As long as you got me, then baby, you know that you got me. You're all I need to get by. Cause we got our love and Samara, ESBCT.
103.3 KUMD. This is Neighbors here on KUMD, an opportunity to talk about how we are coping here in our community, how we're making it work through these challenging times. One of the industries, businesses that has been really pummeled by this coronavirus business in terms of the shutdowns and the need for people to be quarantined are restaurants, of course, and bars. Tom Hansen is a longtime supporter of KUMD. He's the owner of the Duluth Grill and the Duluth Grill family of restaurants. And he joins us this morning to offer some little bit of insight into what's been going on. Tom, you and I were having kind of a schmooze over the weekend, and you were so honest with me about what a pounding your businesses are taking due to this pandemic. Can you talk about that a little bit?
You know, it's just, I think it's unexplainable from what we have to try to think about our business. And just the other day, I kind of jokingly, I would always tell my wife that if I fail, I can just go get another job at a restaurant. And I looked at her the other day and I said, now we can't fail because there's no other restaurant to go get another job at.
And
this is an industry that you could go to work the next day. And I've been in it over 40 years and I've run out the door, whether I've been working for companies that have paid me poorly or whether I've been at the top of the game. I love working with the people I work with. I love serving customers, and I think that's inherent to anybody in the hospitality industry that thrives in it. And it's such an uncontrollable situation that we're in right now that all we have to do is try to think about what it's going to look like a year from now, 2 years from now. And, you know, there is going to be better times, but to get there, going to be one of the hardest struggles in anybody has ever seen in this industry.
A lot of restaurants, hospitality organizations are having to lay people off or furlough them and say your job is here, your job is safe, but you got to go home until I can bring you back. Have you had to do that also?
Oh yeah, yeah. I mean, there's no way that we can maintain our payroll. Was running on average about $86,000 a week. And, you know, we had a lot of good paying jobs. We had a lot of highly tipped employees that are just at a loss right now. And, you know, how that comes back is almost impossible to see it returning to any kind of normal for a long time.
So that must have been, again, you have a reputation for paying your people well so that they can make a living, so they can have lives, so they can make a career of working with you and aren't always trying to quit and, you know, go someplace else where they could make an extra 50 cents an hour or whatever it might be. What was that like for you as a coworker and a friend and the boss to say to these people, I got to do this?
Well, you know, there's a point where leadership is not about just collecting all the good things that happen. You know, that you have to accept the responsibility for the entire situation. And, you know, my first instinct was to say that I have to protect a company for people to come back to. And I kind of jokingly always tell people the paycheck they're going to get with us is very temporary. The experience is something they can keep for the rest of their life. And I'm here to be an example and to be a mentor and to be that kind of a person that forms lifelong relationships. You know, we can't single-handedly create someone's wealth or independence, but we can work as a part of the community to develop people and to do well. And, you know, there's no false expectation that our industry is tough. And, I kind of, my wife and I have been taking a lot of walks, and we fortunately get along well enough that we can live together and work together all day long. So we have kind of this companionship, but we were both 23 years old with three kids, and she was a waitress and I was a bartender. And I kind of told her I've felt this way my whole life. You know, I haven't really known where my paycheck is going to come from or where my bills are going to be paid. Too far into the future, you know, it's been living week to week, and the fact that we've had some success, it really, we've had more uncertain times throughout our life than we have had any level of certainty. And, you know, so this isn't unfamiliar territory, but we're just trying to protect the business so that we have that great environment for people to come back to.
When you and I were talking over the weekend, you were being, again, really honest about a lot of your concerns and how you just don't know how things could come back the way they were and the fact that everything is so uncertain and it does seem to change week by week and there just aren't the kinds of guarantees about what's going to happen down the line. so that you can kind of make plans and you can sort of get a handle on this thing. You know, we as human beings, we hate uncertainty. So it's really, I think that's the hardest part for a lot of people because they just don't know for sure. We get little mileposts like, well, okay, until May 4th, for example, things are going to be shut down. But we don't really have a lot of certainty that they will be opened back up May 5th, for example. But I was also struck with your positivity, and maybe part of that comes from, you know, having what you just described, that you've lived with this kind of uncertainty your whole working life.
Well, you know, I cashed in some retirement money and put it towards what was needed right away. And I told my financial person that I'm okay with that because I'm lucky enough to enjoy what I do. And so I can just do it for a little longer if that's the case. And, you know, this is kind of like part of our, you know, the businesses are like our children. We're not going to just let them be taken away. And, you know, when we get back to the basics, I feel like people are finding some happiness into some very basic calmness to their day. In some ways, we were all kind of running on a treadmill that never ended, and I think some of us didn't think too deeply. So we're kind of looking at things a little differently. We do strongly feel that there's going to be a large amount of turnover. So if you think about it, if we hire 4 or 5 people in a week, that's a huge change to our restaurant. If we end up having to hire back 30% of our staff that would all be brand new, it's almost impossible to see how restaurants are going to reopen. And, you know, if you think about a lot of our staffing, they're college students that all, you know, left dormitories or places where they live and maybe went to their hometowns. So through no undesirable reason, you know, a lot of these people are not even available to come back to work. And I think that's going to be it. And another big one is the supply lines are completely in an upheaval right now. So I'm talking to suppliers and large distributors that, you know, for them, there's complete uncertainty into what they'll be able to send us. You know, I talked to one of my guys today that said, I would be ready to change your menu once a month for the next year. Because what you're buying may not be available to you because the suppliers are going out of business right now.
Wow.
So uncertainty is an underestimate for what's going to be dealt with in the restaurant industry. And then there's things that are expensive that are getting to be so ridiculously cheap right now that, you know, you'd never expect a drop in price on certain things.
Tom, do you feel as though, like you say, there's so much upheaval and things really are it's sort of like they have to kind of be reimagined from the ground up. Do you think that there may be space opening up now? We had a conversation on this show just a few weeks back with a local grower, a small farmer and a small grower that said they can't really get into the pipelines to get into a lot of the stores the way to get their products into some of the stores the way some of the bigger outfits can. Do you think this is maybe opening up some opportunities for local growers that might not have existed before? I mean, bananas are still going to be a problem, but is it opening up some opportunities for some people locally?
It definitely can. And I think, you know, that there's going to be needs that people have to see where they're needed to fill. What I've found is there's a limited amount of product that can be grown in our region that's productive. And, you know, you can only pick one or two suppliers to really support rather than spread yourself out thin. But I do have a farmer delivering me 8 cases of eggs tomorrow, and he's delivering me 100 pounds of ground beef. And, you know, these are relationships that we've been building over a number of years. And, you know, I think that's a big part of it is to get into the system. But you know, as restaurants are evolving, I mean, I think there's kind of two sides to it, that there could very likely be far less restaurants that will reopen. And then the restaurants that do reopen will have supply issues. So I think whoever is working on local product, there is quite a bit of potential for it, but it's really largely put on, you know, if you can build those relationships. It does take many a years. I mean, for what I've done with our restaurants, you know, I've gotten to be fairly visible or people know us, but it took us a good 10 years of really almost scraping by or being behind most of the time to get to the level. So I don't think there's instant success. I think, you know, when you do become more well-known, then people see that, but they don't understand that it took 10 or, you know, in my case, I've been working 30 years in the business before I had really any kind of, you know, visible success that people could be behind.
It's like, you know, like if you were a singer, an overnight sensation, and you say, yeah, well, no, I was, you like the, like some musicians were working in bars for years and years and years before you hit it big. So these things do take time. Tom, do you think there's something maybe different about your personality or just something that you have learned with time that has enabled you to have a you know, not a completely doom and gloom outlook, to have a positive outlook and to see some glimmers of light in this situation?
You know, it's kind of nurture and nature. I think I've always been pretty easygoing. I probably very likely had ADHD when I was a kid, so I know I got to go shoot basketball instead of go to music class. The teacher would send me and another kid to a gym rather than put us during music class. So I feel like maybe that was pre-ADHD, that we were running around burning off energy.
There you go.
So I've always been super hyper energy. But on the other side, I've just had a wonderful upbringing. My parents were not over-daunting. They were very much depression-type parents.
Yeah.
That did not worry about you. You had basic clothing, food, and shelter. And my dad felt that that was the basics. And then they also gave me a ton of freedom and a ton of decision-making. And my mother would always talk about the big R as in responsibility that you had. And, you know, those were things, but not close, daunting parents at all, but a big influence later on in life that they gave me the basics, and you learn to be happy with that. And then anything above and beyond is kind of just a plus.
Yep.
And I do think that we've gotten used to instant gratification with a lot of things. So, you know, I feel that there could be a balancing piece, and they're talking about this generation of young people now could be the next greatest generation. And I hope that they see this and we can blend, you know, kind of multi-generational thinking towards the future of the country and the community and everything.
I think that would be amazing. Tom, you're amazing. Thanks so much for taking some time to talk to us this morning. I really appreciate it.
You're amazing.
Oh,
it's
no.
It's fun to know you, you know. Like
no.
This was a very spontaneous
Just to, you know, the sort of thing, you know, if you get in touch with me over the weekend, you're going to get into a philosophical discussion. It's just the way it goes. Tom, thanks.
It all started over the Johnson family rhubarb.
It did. And the Johnson family rhubarb, I'd like to say, which you can find at the Duluth Grill, is doing well.
The Johnson family rhubarb is doing so well, we might split it and make more of it this year. So
I think that would be an excellent plan. Tom, thanks again. Tom Hansen, our guest this morning on Neighbors. He's the owner of the Duluth Grill and the Duluth Grill family of restaurants. This is Neighbors here on KUMD, a feature on Tuesdays and Thursdays at 10 o'clock to talk about how we as a community are dealing with the coronavirus pandemic, what we're doing to take care of each other, what we're doing to take care of ourselves.